Yes.
Hi there, I see you, Bruna.
It says to heal in class when you join.
Hmm?
It says to heal in class when you join.
You're not joining the Tehillim class. It's not true.
I know. I'm just telling you what it says. When you press on that Zoom.
Hi, Dr. Scott.
Hi there. You got on a few minutes ago, didn't you? But you were only audio. Were you not on, Faye?
I have my video off usually,
yeah.
So I'll probably turn it off again if that's okay.
That's fine. That's fine. We were having some problems beforehand, and it's going to take a few minutes to let everybody in.
Okay.
So we'll just take some time. It's going to be the shortest class I ever remember giving.
Well, thank you.
All right, waiting. There's more people waiting there, and I'm trying to get to them. Faye, I want to ask you one question since you seem to know more of this. When you're turning off the video, I won't be able to see you, but you can see me and you can see the pages that I'm showing?
Yep. Yes.
All right, very good. Okay, there's more people coming in and I'm just trying to take care of this. There goes our time. We'll do what we can. Okay, I think we can get started. I think we can get, hold on a second, there's things popping up here all over the place. All right. Well, good evening, all of you. I can't see you, but I guess you all can see me. Ah, we've got a few more people coming on. Here we go. Okay. I'm going to be probably distracted as more people are trying to pop into the shiur in the short time that we have. My assumption is that everybody knows the story of the Book of Ruth. And I have chosen today to speak about the scene at the threshing floor, which can require a great deal of time, but we're going to focus on one or two little issues in the process of doing so. So I'm going to be showing you the Perek, for those of you that don't know it. This Perek, the third chapter, of Ruth is actually the climax. It is the scene in the threshing floor. I have to mute some of you so I don't have any interruptions, okay? But you can unmute yourselves if you have a comment or a question. In the scene that we're dealing with, we have at the end of the summer. The harvest is virtually done. The time for anybody to be able to glean from the fields for the poor people that gather the peah, the shikha, the leket is over. By now, the owners of the field have their harvest collected. It is there on the threshing floor where they beat it. And it's at that point that they winnow it and protect their grain until it can be ground and stored. Think of it as not the summer in Chicago where we have rain, but the summer in Israel where it is quite dry and you're letting the grains dry out. We are in Bethlehem, which is rather high elevation. The days are hot, the nights are cool. And it is here that Nomi reaches a point of desperation. After a series of encounters in which Ruth has met Boaz, and Naomi had been hoping that Boaz would step up to the plate, now that the harvest is over and they no longer can go into his fields, she is in a desperate state. She's desperate for several reasons. Number one, they no longer have any other food that they can live on for the rest of the winter. It's about to come. Number two, the chances of their being able to redeem the land and the name, which is part of the Ge'ulah and the process of Yibum, looks like it's slipping through the fingers. Boaz has not done what Naomi had hoped that he would do up until now, and that is propose marriage to Ruth. Why does Naomi have such fantasies that he might do so? It's simply that Ruth has been sharing with her about how nice he's been to her, how he told her not to go to anybody else's field, how he told her that her chesed has been renowned, and he sees her as an eshet chayil, which makes her, if you like, all the reasons to believe that she is appropriate. Moreover, unlike other people, he never refers to her as Ruth HaMoaviah. He refers to her only as Ruth, which means that he deems her conversion to be legitimate. And he is of the opinion that the ones that are forbidden to convert and enter the Klal of Israel are Moavim and Ammonim, but not Moaviah or a Ammonite. The women would not have been in the position to offer food and water to the Israelites coming from the desert, entering Eretz Israel. You will recall that as they were at the border, the Moavim not only did not offer them any food, they refused to sell it for full price. And in addition, they participated along with Bilam to A, curse them, and B, to seduce the men and bring them to sin, hoping that that way God's curses would befall on the Israelites and they would not enter Eretz Israel. Keep in mind that at no time did the Israelites intend to take the land of Ammon or Moab. They were merely going to cross through their territory and go over to the other side of the Jordan. But the Moavim and the Ammonim were not going to forgive. This was not something that they were going to allow them to happen. And as a result, what we hear in the Torah is, and I will share with you the my screen here, is as follows. In Dvarim, we are told, and this is, I've got more people coming in. All right, here we are. We are told, Lo yavo amoni umoavi bikahal Hashem. They cannot enter the Kahal Hashem. To enter means to enter it through marriage. They can accept God, but they're not part of Am Yisrael. Even Gan Dor Asiri, not even the 10th generation, Lo yavo lahem bikahal Hashem ad olam. Now you need to recognize that this is quite different from Mitzrim, or any other nation. Even the Egyptians who enslaved us did not treat us in the way that Ammon and Moab did, particularly since they're our kinsmen. They are descendants of Lot, who was the nephew of Avraham Avinu, as you know. And so they themselves represent not only the evil eye, if you like, the inability to give anybody something as that the people in Sodom did. And you remember that in Sodom, it was a capital sin, a capital crime to offer anybody any food, any shelter, any hospitality. They were very much sheli sheli, shelcha shelcha, and nothing in between. So they are not allowed to ever marry in this case. What we have here is a question about whether or not Ruth can convert. At this time, since there had been no previous converts coming from Moab, the halacha of Ammonite velo Ammonite And Moaviah is differentiated since the women are not the same as the men and those women can convert, was not yet widely accepted. So if you go through the book of Ruth, you will notice that everywhere she's called, depending on who's talking to her, to whom, who is perceiving her, she is referred to as the Moaviah. What occurs in this case, in this chapter, is that now, since Boaz was so generous in his approach to Ruth, since he called her Ruth and referred to her as a Eshet Chayil, it is Naomi's position that he will surely consider her appropriate for marriage, and she can't figure out why he hasn't done it. So Naomi, oopsie daisy, hold on a second, gotta share this with you all. Naomi decides to take the bull by the horns and take a, still not seeing it, huh? There we go. In the third chapter, you all got it now? Here we are. She decides to take the bull by the horns and do the initiative that previously she had not taken. And she asks her daughter-in-law to do something which would be very daring, unconventional in the best of times. And the worst risk of it all is that in so doing, she risks again that people will view Ruth as the Moaviah. Moaviot, in the eyes of the Israelites, were seen as people who exemplify promiscuity and perversity. And that's exactly what they did at the border of Eretz Israel, where they tried to seduce the men. So they are known as people who were not only born out of incest, because you'll remember that Lot conceived with his daughters. And what the eldest named her her son Moav from father. So not only was she not ashamed about what she did, she publicized that they came from Mamzerim. This Mamzerut goes through the generation. So we have here somebody who comes from a birth of a Mamzer, and at the same time is somebody who comes from a nation that is renowned for its promiscuity. And if Ruth would do what her mother-in-law had suggested to her, go down to the Goren, a spy where he is sleeping, wait for everybody to go to bed, and then when he's fast asleep, approach him. Lay at his feet, uncover his feet. When he'll get the night chill, he will see you, and hopefully you will be able to seduce him. Now, she never actually says this. What she tells you is, V'hu yagid lach et asher ta'asin. He'll tell you what to do. And whatever he tells you to do, you will do. And hamevin yavin, you get the hint. And her response is, kol asher tomri ese. But the Kri says, kol asher tomri elai ese. Which means she actually told her, I'll do whatever you told me to do. But what's written there is that I will actually understand that you want me to do something that you would not do. Now, Naomi tried to get out of that issue by telling her, if you look carefully, all the Kriyin Ktiv here is when she tells her, go and bathe yourself, anoint yourself, put on your clothes. The Ktiv is written, I would bathe, I would anoint myself, I would dress, I would do this. As if to say, if I was young enough, if I was pretty enough, if I could still bear children, I would do this. I'm not asking you to do something that I would not do myself. What happens that night is, of course, and then this I will share with you, the page that we looked at beforehand. Here we go. Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. Now you know that line, right? Vayihi b'chatzi halayla, we've got here in Ruth. Vayihi b'chatzi halayla, you have in Megillat Esther. And it's the middle of the night after she figured out where he's laying down there. Vayecherat ha'ish. He was startled and he trembled because it was cold. The nights are cold there. Vayelafet. Now, yelafet means he actually turned that blanket, trying to pull it on himself. Vehine isha shochevet mangelotav, and he sees a woman, a specter, at his feet, and he calls on her, Miat, who are you? Now, on the surface, we might say that he's asking her because he can't see. It's nighttime. There's no light pollution. He can hardly say who it is, and he doesn't believe his eyes. It's in the middle of sleep. And therefore, he says, Miat, who are you? And she responds, Anochi Rut Amatecha. But now she goes a step further. Her mother-in-law never told her to do this. Uferasta knafecha alamatecha. Cast your wing over me. Quite boldly. But remember, the language she uses is exactly the language that Boaz used when he met her the first time. And he says, I heard all about you. I heard how good you are to your mother-in-law, how kind you were to the dead, meaning her husband. And I also heard that you've come to be under the wing of the Ribono Shel Olam, talking about God as spreading his wing and taking you under your wing, which is an indication of your conversion. So when she repeats his own words to him, she's not merely using a seductive language that says you can have your way with me, but she's saying, in fact, she's echoing his words, Miat. These words, according to many, are meant to be an allusion for something of the very same kind. Does he see her? Can he recognize who she is? Is it the night so dark that he cannot see who's there? Or is there something else going on? We see a similar situation in the book of Shmuel. You will remember that David HaMelech was called when he was a young lad to come and play the harp and pull Shaul out of his melancholic spells. And he did. He would be called every so often when he would fall into a funk, and he would manage to sing to him and bring him out of it. The first case of music therapy that we know in the world. Later on, young David, who is but a shepherd, is sent by his father out to the battlefield where Shaul and his men are assembled, and they are facing none other than Goliath. Shaul has thrown the gauntlet down. What happened? Shaul has asked whoever it would be that would be brave enough to go out into the battlefield against Goliath, that he would give his daughter in hand in marriage and would make him a very wealthy man. And yet no one dared to stand up against Goliath. David happens to come by the battlefield and he brings food for his brothers who are soldiers, but he's the runt of the family and he's left for the sheep. What he does is, he says, I'll go out there. I can't stand to hear this man cursing, mocking our God and our people. I'll go out there to the battlefield. Of course, never having had a sword on him. And as you remember the story, nothing more than a couple of stones in his pocket and a slingshot. And what we're told there is, Ukirot Shaul et David. When Shaul saw David, Yotze likrat haplishtim, marching out on the battlefield towards the Goliath, Amar el Avner, Sarat Sava, he speaks to the head of his army, Avner, Ben Mizehana, whose son is this? Avner. Vayomer Avner, And Avner responds, Chay nafshecha ha-melech, im yadati. As God lives, as you live, I don't know, I have no idea. This is absurd. David has been coming to him for years. He knows exactly who he is. And yet he seems to be questioning his paternity. What are we talking about? Whose son is he? He knows who David is. Later on, he goes and says, Vayomer HaMelech, so he tells him, Shamata, you go and ask. Ben Mizeh HaElem, who is this lad? Ukeshuv David. And when David came back after having killed Goliath, holding his head in his hand, Avner takes him, Vayivieu lifnei Shaul, and he's presenting him with the head, the beheaded, the head of the giant Goliath. And Shaul turns to him and says, Ben mi ata now, lad, whose son are you? And he answers him, almost as if, has he gone into a fugue? Is he having early amnesia? Ben avdecha Yishai, bet alachmi. I am the son of Yishai, who lives, of course, in Beit Lechem. What's the question? The question was that Shaul offered his daughter in marriage to whoever would kill Goliath. But there's a big problem now. This young man is going out there, and perhaps he cannot marry her because David is the descendant of Ruth. And if he's a descendant of Ruth, asur lo lavo bekahal Hashem, he cannot marry. So to Shaul, David is not legitimate. David is the son of a descendant of Ruth, Hamoaviah, and they cannot enter Kahal Yisrael for 10 generations. I believe, and many others, great scholars have argued, as does the Medrash, that when he asks, who are you?
That's
right. He's also asking about her legitimacy. The question about whether or not he can marry her. And thereby explaining, perhaps, why not. Somebody wants to comment? Okay. Well, then she comes back. He tells her that he's going to check things out in the Shah amongst the other judges and clarify the situation. He will also determine whether or not there is a kinsman who is closer, a closer blood relative who has the obligation of Yibum. And unless they do Chalitza, he cannot marry her. And he tells her, go back to your mother-in-law. And he sends along, as you will remember, 6 seorim in her handkerchief and tells her to wait that night. But by dawn, he sends her off. Well, when she arrives at her mother-in-law, we get again the same line. Vatavoil chamota, and when she came to her mother-in-law, Vatomel, she said to her, Miat biti, who are you, my daughter? It's daylight. No way that she doesn't know who this is. And particularly since she calls her biti, my daughter. So why is she asking miat? I have argued in the past that what she's asking,
are you on
your status? Are you married? Do you sleep with you? What happened? What does he consider you? Is he considering you a Jewess? Or is he considering you a Moavi? Tell me, what are you, my daughter? So miat is not who are you, but what are you? Because that was not yet still clear. And Ruth is offended. Because there might also be a question, miat biti. And then she says, she told her all that he did to her. And what did he do to her? And the answer is absolutely nothing. And instead she tells her, Shesha Seorim Ha'ele Natan Li. He gave me these six barley. Some say that it's nothing more than six stalks. Others say that it was six measures, a rather heavy duty carrying that she brought home to that it would tide them over the time. And he told her, Al tavoy rekam melchamotech, don't go empty handed to your mother-in-law, which means even if I can't marry you, at least take some food back to her. At the end of the threshing floor, just when it looks like we're going to reach a climax, we're left right back where we started. Ruth is left hanging. Ruth is left frustrated, not knowing if her conversion has been accepted and what will happen the next day. Okay, I need to let you go. Now you can go read the rest of the story, of course, and you'll see that this chapter, like all chapters, show a progression. We move forward and then we move back. We move forward and we move back. Naomi is convinced of Boaz's good intentions, but Ruth has no idea where she stands. Is she a Nochriya or is she a Yehudiya? Will she be accepted or not? All right, ladies, it's good to see you all, for those that I'm seeing. And for the rest of you, I want to wish you a happy Yom Tov and remain safe and healthy. And I understand that you need to go out now to your next class, so I got to let you go.
Thank you so much. Chag Sameach.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chag Sameach.
Bye-bye. Chag Sameach.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Schaap.
Bye-bye.
It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be well.